The talk that I'm going to give this afternoon is similar to the one I gave in Canada 2 weekends ago. And I guess it starts about 40 years ago when Carl and I decided to sit down and start working on a script called The Golden Thread, which would explain mediumship in the Bible. And while I had known the Bible quite well, because I used to read it as a kid, and I went to the synagogue every Saturday, and they would read a portion of it in the Hebrew. And of course, that didn't do much for me because I don't understand Hebrew, so I would read the English translations as they were reading the Hebrew. And so I got to know the Bible stories quite well. And the thing that Carl kept impressing upon me was that the laws of psychic science have never changed, and what was true in biblical times is still true today. I know you've heard that hundreds of times. For some people, that's a new concept. And for me in 1978, it was a new concept for me too, because like I said, I didn't realize that when Abraham heard a voice, he was a medium. And when Moses saw the vision of the burning bush, he was a medium. Because the whole idea of mediumship was still quite new to me. So the book, the Bible is really a book of psychic history. As you know, because we talk about it quite often, it's been edited and reworked through the centuries of time. It contains a lot of man-made laws of the priests. But it also contains other concepts of mind control and domination of different groups. And for some reason, I haven't been talking about that as much as I had, as much as I should. And that's kind of one of the themes that's going to go through this lecture. The Bible is very much like panning for gold, and I know some of you as gemologists know what that's like. And as you go and you put your pan in, bring up all this dirt and rocks and all this stuff, and have to sift through it, and all the rocks and the dirt and the sand leaves the pan. And if you're lucky, you have one or two little pieces of golden nuggets, psychic truths. And that's what the Bible is really like. You have to sift through a lot of stuff and junk that was put in there, but there's also psychic truths in there. And the thing about spiritualism, and it's hard to say this because a lot of spiritualism takes the whole Bible and wants to throw it out because of all the stuff that's in there that is untrue and all the mind control, they want to get rid of the whole thing. They don't realize that they really need to sift through it with their knowledge of psychic science and pull out the gems and get rid of the garbage. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, about a week before I went to Canada, I was sitting for Spirit and I asked Spirit for a topic of what I should speak about in Canada. And I received an email from Spirit. And I call it an email because it's very much like that. As I sat there, I had a vision. And as I looked at it, all this information came through. It's like sometimes I send an email to you, and there's a picture and there's words. I saw the picture very clearly. What I saw was this torch that's on the cover of our program, but without the flame. But it was this exact torch. But it wasn't this brownish color. It was it was made out of pewter. And I have a friend of mine who collects antique beer steins. And so I know what old pewter looks like and how it develops a certain patina and how it has a certain color when it's aged. And that was the color of this torch that I saw. No flame, but a torch. And then all of a sudden, all this information came. You know, it was like the text of the message just kind of started filtering through my mind as I was looking at this torch. And what I was being told was that this torch is very much like the torch that's used at the Olympics. Where they light the flame in Athens, and then they run it across a certain amount of distance, and then it's handed to another person who takes the torch and runs it, and like a relay race till it gets to its destination. And what I was told was that the truth of spiritualism has been handed down from medium to medium through the ages of time. Just like that relay race, only we're talking through time now. So that these truths, which were created to help inspire us in how to live, which are actually the seven principles, were being passed down from person to person. And as each person, it's just like that relay race. They're holding an unlit torch till the other person comes, they receive the knowledge, they light their torch, and they carry it forward to the next person. Then I started to realize where this lecture was supposed to go, and I started to really not feel too comfortable with it, because it was taking me to areas that I wasn't totally comfortable talking about in public. So then I decided, well, what am I going to do about this? And I started again to think about the Bible, because see, unfortunately, you know, I hear parents, they complain about the fact that when they become parents and they have this newborn baby, they don't have an instruction book on what to do. Okay, so they have to kind of wing it. Well, mediums are a little bit luckier. They do have an instruction book, and it's called the Bible. There's all sorts of examples of mediums and their lives in the Bible that we can use. So when I got this message that I wasn't happy with, I thought about the prophet Jonah. And he received a message from Spirit to go to Nineveh and to preach that they should repent. And he got very frightened because he said, I don't want to do that. He said, they don't want to hear that. They're going to stone me. So he decided to run away. And he went on this boat, and there was a storm, and they threw him overboard, and he was swallowed by a whale. He was in this big fish for 3 days, and he repented, and finally said, okay, God, I'll do what you want. And he came, was regurgitated from the fish, and he went into Nineveh, and he did what he was told. So it doesn't pay to really run away from what Spirit tells you to do. And I decided that's not the model to follow. Then I thought about Jeremiah, which you probably have heard me talk about before. In the first chapter of Jeremiah, Jeremiah is a teenager, and he hears his voice, and the voice tells him, you're going to be my prophet, you're going to go from place to place and say what I want you to say. And he says, are you kidding? I'm a young kid, leave me alone. He said, I can't do that. And Spirit tells him that they're going to put the words in his mouth, and they're going to make him as strong as iron before all these people, and no one can destroy him. And he eventually does all that. And he eventually ends up talking against the political people at the time, telling them that Israel is going to be captured and that they're going to be taken away in captivity. And the king gets so angry at him, he throws him in prison. So he learned that he had to say what Spirit wanted to, even though it was not really in his best interests physically. But that was part of his mission. So I have to deliver kind of what I was told to deliver and hope they put the words in my mouth. I'm calling this lecture the spiritual Dramamine for the 21st century. And Dramamine, as you probably know, is a drug that you take for motion sickness, especially if you're on a cruise, you know, and you're in a boat and it's going up and down and up and down. And the reason I'm talking about this is because, as you'll see, we're going to be talking about a lot of motion. As I said to you before, in Emma Hartage, Britain, 23 years after Fox Sisters brought modern spiritualism to the surface of the planet, she brought the seven principles of spiritualism, which is really is the same thing as what we just said, although it's worded differently. And the first principle is infinite spirit, divine creator of all that is, which is the same concept that we talked about, God being mind. We've all read the Bible to some extent, and we know that the Bible talks about God, and it starts off Bereshis bara Elohim HaShemayim v'Haaretz. God created the heaven and earth. And that's the Hebrew and the English. It's the way Genesis starts off. So we were told that God created the earth in 6 days, and he rested on the seventh. Scientists disagree with that. They say the planet's billions of years old. They claim that somehow there was a big bang, and this explosion happened and created the universe. Metaphysicians tell us that God contemplated himself, and when he did that, there was an explosion. And in that explosion, all souls were created at the same time. So that the concept of an old soul kind of isn't accurate. Now, they might have had multiple incarnations and had more incarnations, lived on Earth more times. But according to them, all souls were created at the same time. So, we have the creation of the Earth. And if we look at it kind of like this, we have God and we got human beings. And God created man. And so there was a separation between God and man. And we are living in a physical world. And our physical world is full of duality. We have good and evil, black and white, male and female, gay and straight, right and wrong, master and slave, true and false, angel and devil, powerful and powerless, going back and forth. And this is what our society is like. And in fact, nowadays, this duality is even bigger and stronger with the political system that we're living in, with the Democrats and the Republicans, and each one's being unhappy with the other's ideas to the point of really not living very spiritually towards the other group. This movement is why I'm talking about Dramamine. Because in order for us to be more spiritual, we have to get out of this duality of back and forth. Because in actuality, this fifth principle talks about personal responsibility for the creation of our reality through thought, word, and deed. We are the ones that create our own destiny or reality. And the way we do that is to manifest things in our life. So we're living our lives in this flow of back and forth. But in order to manifest something, we have to stop that, focus on what we want to bring into our life, which means we stop the back and forth. And as we stand there, as we project this thought, and not if in, I hope this happens, I would like this to happen, perhaps it will happen, because that swings into duality. We have to sit and say, I know this is happening. I can see myself 2 months from now, it's already happened. And as that happens, this separation between God and ourselves shrinks. And we bring the thought to God, and it manifests. More accurately, it's this way. We bring the thought to our God, our energy, which is here in our soul, and our soul will carry it forward. But not if you're in the swing. Okay? So this knowing this is the Dramamine to stop the motion. And to stop, I'm going to say the craziness, because that's what wants to come out of my mouth at this point. We're living in a very difficult time, you know, because there is so much hatred and so much people who think they're in the right, okay, when they're either here or here. They're not here. If they were here and they're talking about it, it might, okay, we might be able to say something. Well, maybe that is correct. But they're out here in one way or the other. And the point is, and the point of this whole talk is, that it is you who has to hold the torch up, because the torch is being handed to you. And what is the torch? The torch is really the seven principles, the seven ideas that we're talking about. If we can live them, it helps bring us out of the duality, out of this back and forthness, and helps us be here. And the more we can shine this and be an example for other people to follow or to see what's happening, perhaps we can get the swing to stop somewhat. Okay? And, you know, sometimes I think I'm talking pie in the sky. This is not an easy thing to do because the swing is so difficult. However, if we can't do it for ourselves, if we can't be the one little example that might affect someone else who might affect someone else, then it's never going to happen. So we have to be able to take that torch. We have to stand in the knowing this. And we have to know that we are responsible for our own reality and our own creation, because we manifest what we think. Okay? And if we think negative things, the negative things happen. I know for me, this is a very hard lecture because I have a hard time with this myself. It's hard for me to be in the negative, in the positive, okay? And I think I've told you this before. When Carl wanted me to write the first book, I wasn't hearing it. You know, it was like, and I knew this principle, and I said, well, I know I can't be positive, but I don't have to be negative either. I don't have to be here. I can just be neutral and see what happens. Okay, and to me, that's the best compromise. Because if you know yourself and you know that you really tend to be in the swing, okay, being neutral and say, okay, I'm not going to put in negative thoughts towards it, and I'll be as positive as I can, which can be a very tiny bit. But just the fact that you're not bombarding it with negativity helps you to bring it together and bring it into your life. The second principle talks about unity and equality for all, which is a very powerful thought. However, most of history, that hasn't been true. And when we look at the Bible, we would think that we would find that concept in the Bible, but we actually don't. We actually find the opposite, because the Bible is full of inequities. And it starts off in the very beginning, where in the 26th verse of the first chapter in Genesis, it says, and God said, let us make man in our image and our likeness. Interesting that it's a plural noun, a plural pronoun, I should say. And so God created man in his own image, and the image of God, he created a male and female. In reality, it was the other way around. Humans created God in their image. They made God anthropomorphic. They gave him your human characteristics. They made him as an old man sitting on a throne someplace with a crown on his head and a long gray beard. And he's in a piece of real estate in the sky judging us and doing all this stuff. They said God could become angry. They gave him human emotions. Because the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses when Moses was saying, I can't be your prophet. Get somebody else to go talk to Pharaoh. God himself says he was a jealous God in the Ten Commandments. How can energy be that way? God is really energy. The image of God has been manipulated so that we think that he's human, because they wanted us to think that way, the people who wrote the Bible. Then you have Abraham who decides that he wants to save the people of Sodom. So he talks to God and he says, hey God, if we find 50 righteous people living in Sodom, are you still going to destroy the city? And God says, well, perhaps not, I won't. And Abraham said, that's a lot of people. I don't know if there's that many righteous people in Sodom. How about 40? And he works it down to 10. Let's make a deal. Okay, so all these human qualities, they're pushing on this creator of the universe, which is really divine energy. Because they don't want you to think of it as energy, because they can't control you if they know if you think of God as energy and that God's right here in the center of your chest, and you can talk to your God, and you can have him manifest things in your life. Well, you don't need a church then. You don't need to sit in the church. You don't need to give your money to the people in the church, and so forth. It was a very dangerous thing for Orthodox religion to deal with. From the beginning of time, in the Bible, we find that men and women are not equal. There's not an equality. And what's so interesting is that perhaps, if any of this story is true, there's a powerful message in what happened, but it didn't get into the Bible. There's a book called I lost it. The Legends of the Jews by Lewis Ginsberg. And he talks about the creation of the first woman. The first woman's name was Lilith, not Eve. Lilith was made at the same time Adam was made, out of the same earth that Adam was made. And Lilith was very much a person who stood up for herself. So when Adam wanted to boss her around and said, you got to do what I want you to do, she said, why? I'm not going to do that. Okay? And this had to do with everything. from things in sexual natures and things beyond that. She said, you and I are made from the same dust. I don't have to listen to your nonsense. You can't tell me what to do. And she got so frustrated with Adam, and this is a very interesting point, she said the holy name of God, and she flew off someplace. This is part of the reason they don't want you to know how to say the God's name. You know, in Hebrew, you see the letters, but you say something totally different. It's not anything what the letters say, because they don't want you to pronounce it, because they don't want you to have that power. So, if you're interested, go online and look up Lilith, because I'm not going to talk about what happened afterwards, because it's very, very negative. They turned her into a demon, saying she did all sorts of horrible things, all because she didn't want to listen to Adam. She wasn't going to put up with his nonsense. She wanted equality, and he wasn't giving it to her, so she said, bye. Okay, so what did people in the Bible do? They created Eve, and they said that God put Adam to sleep, and he took out a rib, and they made Eve out of the rib of Adam. Therefore, Adam was superior, and Eve wasn't. Okay, and they went with that for thousands of years. But rabbis are very, you know, they understand the Hebrew very well, and the word for rib is selah, and that word selah can mean rib or it can mean side. And guess how many times it means rib.
One.
In the story of Genesis. Other than that, it's side. And there are plenty of rabbis who said that when God created man, he, and that's a bad word to use, but I don't have another one, was androgynous. He was both male and female. And that God separated the male side from the female side and created male and female. A lot of rabbis say that, but they don't talk about it. There's also, if you read about how the Bible was written, there's different sources. And one of the main sources is called J, meaning Yahweh. Okay, but it comes from the German, and in German they spell it with a J, and that's why it's J. Sometimes it says Jehovah in English. Okay, and the one thing about Jehovah was they were very patriarchal. So they were pro-man, anti-female, and very anti-goddess worship. And you have to realize that the Bible wasn't written until after the Jews went into Babylonia. You know, so it's you have hundreds of years of a history where there was no written document. So they had been exposed to the Canaanite religion, which had goddesses, and so they wanted to push all that aside. And therefore, they came up with this idea of the rib and the suppression of women to get things so that they wouldn't worship goddesses. And then they put in lines in the Bible like, you shall not suffer a witch to live. In Corinthians, women weren't allowed to speak at church. They weren't allowed to be a teacher because they couldn't teach a man. They did everything they could to put women down so that they could have no authority over a man. And this is all because they were afraid of women. The main reason they were afraid of women? Because if you have a woman medium standing here, and let's face it, more women are more psychic than men. Women's intuition, they usually call it. They connect to spirit a lot easier. And it's very interesting, you know, I do this all the time. I can't exactly tell when spirit comes through and starts using me to speak. Okay, so if a woman's up here and has this easy connection, she can slip very easily into a semi-trance state and start saying all sorts of things that might contradict the religion that she's supposed to represent. This is why the Catholic Church will never allow a woman to be a priest, because they're afraid that she'll get up there and expose all the man-made dogmas that they think is so important to the Catholic Church, and which a lot of their money base is based on. Then we come to the problem of slavery. Because slavery supposedly was okayed in the Bible. God said it's okay to have slaves in Leviticus 25:44. Anyone gave us this information that Pope Gregory, I believe he was lived in the 700s. He owned over 1,000 slaves. And he was at the time having the Bible rewritten. And one of his slaves came up to him and said, Master, is it really right in God's eyes for you to own us body, mind, and soul? And Pope Gregory stopped for a moment and thought and said, you know what, I'll get back to you in a couple of days. And he runs upstairs, and he seeks out a certain priest, because all the books were divided. You know, one was doing Genesis, one was doing Leviticus, one was doing this book and that book. And he goes to the one in Leviticus to say, put in something about slavery so we can say that God wants it. So the scribe follows the commands, and Gregory brings the new book down, shows the slave as if he could read, and says, God says it's okay. And therefore, it went through. In the first book of Peter, it's even more difficult to understand. Because it says in there, servants, be subject to your master with all fear. Not only the good and gentle, but also the froward. For it is thankful if a man for conscience towards God endures grief, suffering, and wrongly. So if your master beats you unjustly, you're serving God. This is what they're telling this a slave. Written in the book. How is that equality? As I said before, you have to take that pan of gold and shift it to God, and that all this information is go shh, and it's out of there. Because it doesn't coincide with our principles. And our principles are the spiritual truths that have been traveling down through the ages, although that, you know, sometimes that flame gets a little low in that torch because of the understanding. So the Bible talks of 1,000 years of psychic demonstration. You had mediums who had to live up to what they were being told, even though it could endanger them. You had Samuel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Hosea. They each spoke out against the priests, saying, God doesn't want the sacrifices. Because the sacrifices was filling the bellies of the priests and doing nothing for the people who they were bringing the food to them. Supposedly their sins were forgiven, but the priest ate very well. You have examples of in the Bible, like Micaiah. There was a conflict where they wanted to wage war. And the king of Israel, who was King Ahab, and King Jeroboam got together. That was Israel and Judah. There were two kingdoms at that time. And they decided, let's combine and wage a war against this other enemy. So they asked the prophets what they should do, and the prophets say, hey, this is a wonderful idea, go do it. And then Jeroboam says something interesting. He says, isn't there a prophet of the Lord around, meaning Jehovah? So they go and get him, and his name was Micaiah. And they say to him, look, when you go see the king, you tell him to go to war. And Micaiah says, hey, if Spirit tells me to say that, I will say that. If not, forget it. I'm telling what Spirit says. And of course, he gets there and he tells him not to go to war. The king wants to throw him into prison because he didn't say what he wanted to hear. And meanwhile, they lost the war. You know, so the Spirit was correct. Jeremiah also, as I said before, was thrown into prison for prophesying what Spirit wanted him to do. So we have the concepts of the seven principles throughout the history of the world coming through mediums, even though it's long before the 1800s when they were formally written down by Emma Britton Hardage. In 1425, Spirit clairaudiently told the teenage girl, Joan of Arc, to lead France's army to get the English out of France. She was in a situation where women couldn't do anything. Women were not allowed to leave their own town to go anywhere without a male escort in those days. Okay? It's also similar, I left out before, when with Emma, and when she came, she broke all the traditional rules when she came to America and spoke to an audience, because women were allowed to speak to an audience. And on religious subjects, that was even worse. And she had to face all these people who were out there, similar to today, what certain people face, with these Bible thumpers who say, this is the devil speaking because she's breaking the rules. Women aren't supposed to talk. They're supposed to be silent in the churches, as I said before. So she had to fight all that stuff in those days. It's hard for us to put ourselves in that kind of situation, that the world was that, lived that way, and had those values, because we've changed so much from that to today. But yet there's so much more to change. I'm not sure how many of you know this, but when we look at the abolitionist movement in the United States, who were trying to stop slavery, spiritualism was very active in that movement. You probably heard the name Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. She was a spiritualist. And she wrote this book about how slavery was bad. Another not well-known fact is that Abraham Lincoln, there's an argument that he was a spiritualist. He might have been, perhaps he was, it's hard to know. But he definitely had seances in the White House. There was a medium from Hartford, Connecticut. Her name was Nettie Colburn Maynard. And she was brought to the White House, and there was a seance there, and she went into trance. And the advice that came through her was about the Emancipation Proclamation. Spirit said, issue it and free the slaves. And Abraham Lincoln did. I'll read to you a little part of it. There's a book about it. It was Abraham Lincoln, the Spiritualist. I'll read just a little part of it for you. And this is, again, her words. I entered with my friends the red parlor of the White House at 8 o'clock that evening, and we're talking about December 1862. While he, Lincoln, was yet speaking, I lost all consciousness of my surroundings and passed under control. So in other words, she was just talking, and all of a sudden Spirit overshadowed her to the point that she no longer remembered what was happening, and Spirit was talking through her. So she went into a trance state. Carl used to do that all the time. He used to be up here lecturing to the people, and it was just a switch off. It's like, you know how on TV where they go from one person to the other, and one comes in and one comes out, this fade in, fade out at the same time? That's what it was with him. And of course with Carl, it was, for me, it was easy to know what was happening because he all spoke with his southern accent a bit, you know, and he said, I'm going here and I'm going there, with no G's at the end. And when he was under spirit control, he was going, the G's were there. So we just had to listen for the G's and you knew if he was under control or not. And so this is what happened in this case. She just blended it out, you know, faded out, and spirit came in. I lost all consciousness and my surroundings passed under control. For more than an hour, I was made to talk to him and learn from my friends afterwards that it was upon matters that he seemed fully to understand. While they comprehended very little of that portion was reached that the relation of the forthcoming Emancipation Proclamation. So Spirit told him what to do. He also was told about visiting the troops at some certain spot, which he also did. Mr. Lincoln turned to me, laying on his hands upon my head, and uttered these words in a manner that I shall never forget. My child, you possess a very singular gift, but that it is of God, I have no doubt. I thank you for coming here tonight. It is more important than perhaps anyone present can understand. So he took this to heart. Now, we living here in America, I'm sure for some of you this may be brand new information. Okay. In the 1980s, I went to England and I went to the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain, which is one of the spiritualist groups in England. There's also the SNU and there's this one. They used to have a big headquarters in Belgrave Square, which is a certain place in London. So I went there, and it was similar to this. They were holding a service, and there was mediums there giving messages and so forth. Then I went upstairs. And when I was upstairs, there was this big picture of Abraham Lincoln and a big plaque talking about how he listened to Spirit and issued the Emancipation Proclamation. This is in Britain. You don't find that here in the United States. Nobody talks about it. Okay, but in Britain they did. And finally, in 1865, the 13th Amendment came into being, which abolished slavery. Spiritualism was also very important for working for women's suffrage. Susan B. Anthony, which I'm sure you've heard of, who worked very hard to get the vote for women, she spoke at the auditorium in Lilydale many, many, many times. She was one to help bring forth that equality. So, as spiritualists, we have been following the principles of our religion, which helps to bring forth more of a spiritual living. Okay? Because we recognize that everyone's equal. We recognize that we should be in harmony with people. We say that we cannot go out and commit, I'll use the word sins, or misdeeds, and then go to church and have them forgiven, you know, automatically just to go out and do it again next week. Okay? We have to take responsibility for our actions. We understand that. So while we are living in this duality right now, and especially now where things are so bad, with the hatred so bad for different groups of people, and whether it's on a religious thing, or whether it's on a racial bias, or just Democrats and Republicans. And it's really, if you think about it, it's really kind of nauseating, because of the emotion. You listen to the news, it's one way or the other, or it's depending on what channel you're on. You're constantly going back and forth. So that if you try to absorb the principles of spiritualism and live them, okay, as Dramamine, to stop this back and forth motion, okay, it is our heritage. These truths have been going through the centuries of time, through the Bible, through biblical times, through the Middle Ages, and down to us. So if you can keep focused on the principles and try to live them to the best of your ability, it'll help to ground you. It'll help you to stop this back and forth motion of plurality. And I'm going to go back to our 40th anniversary when Carl gave this message through me. He said, "Go forth, light the torch that comes from your soul and shine it into the world, and be that beacon of light into the world." While I agree with him, we have to understand what that torch is. And the torch is, at the time afterwards, I thought it was learning to communicate with your spirit guides. Okay? Now I'm starting to realize it was to be living the spiritual principles. We each have to hold high that torch of spiritual knowledge and live it. And be the example to other people of how to live, recognizing that we are all equal. Treating everyone equal, being responsible for our own destinies and for our own way of living. And by living this way as an example, hopefully other people will see how we are coping with things as they are today. And maybe we can be an example for someone else to take the torch from us and continue to light and increase the light into the world. So that's my message for today.